Welcome to the latest episode of The Grower and The Economist. I'm Michelle Klieger, The Economist.
And I'm Peter Kanjoyan, The Grower.
Each week, we team up to tackle the biggest challenges facing small and medium-sized growers. We're one part grower and one part economist, just like your business. Welcome to this episode of The Grower and The Economist. This is an exciting episode for us. I think it's the first time we are having a repeat guest. Renee Bromhauser is back with us. He was the grower last summer who really bridges that line between what growing for yourself or a hobby is versus being a farm. And he grows for his extended family. And Peter and Renee have a personal relationship. So I am glad to have you back. I learned a lot from you about your operation and that difference between hobby and professional and where you fit in and how each of us can fit in, as well as looking at how you're starting to think about your next season. And if you're, you know, recruiting interest from your friends and family on what you should grow, or if you're just growing what you think is interesting. So I'm going to hand it over to Peter, but thank you so much for coming back.
Well, thanks for having me, Michelle. And I was flattered when you invited me the first time, and I'm doubly flattered and practically flabbergasted that you invited me back. So it's nice to be here. I enjoy and love having these conversations.
Hey, Renee, thanks for spending this time with us. You and I have a lot of fun talking about this and other topics, and Michelle kind of seamlessly just folds right into any conversation that comes out of you and me. So let's have a little fun during this episode. You and I came up with several bullet points or topics of conversation, and I have them in front of me. So I'm going to just quickly read down through those topics, Michelle, and then we will allow the conversation to meander through, and occasionally I'll pull us back onto the list. So, Renee, here are the things that you and I decided we'd like to talk about. One is the scheduling that you conduct on your family, your household gardening chores. And once we get going, I'd like you to just relive a bit and describe for our listeners what level of home gardening you're practicing. And it involves more than one location. So the scheduling, we want to spend a couple of minutes on the excitement that you as a home gardener and I as a commercial grower still feel when the New Year's seed catalogs arrive in the mail or online. We'd like to touch on Renee's COVID season plan two or COVID plan season two. And on the technical side of things, Renee and I are working on shifting his basement germinating of equipment over from pink LED light to broad spectrum white, which Michelle and I have discussed in earlier episodes with commercial light manufacturers. And then Renee, you wanted to spend a minute on a take. On a story I told in the past about how I abused my dad during our retail garden center days. So if we have time at the end, you can share some of your thoughts on that. So to get started, Renee, give us a little background on the gardening that you're practicing, and then we'll shift into how you do your scheduling, how you practice your scheduling.
Yeah, I thought about that the last time we talked, and I mentioned how big my gardens were. Michelle quickly did the calculations while we were all talking and figured out, I think it was, 1/16 or 1/8 of an acre. So I'll revisit that and I'll be even more specific to that. I'm a home gardener. I'm a hobbyist gardener. I'm retired, so I don't have the distraction of that full-time 8-to-5 job. But I do have a couple other distractions like everybody else in my life. But And as a home gardener, I have a garden in my backyard, a vegetable garden in my backyard. And I also have two plots at a community garden. In between my home and the community garden, I have 47, the equivalent of 47 4x8 raised beds. And I say the equivalent because I have a couple of 4x4 raised beds that I use for cold frames. And at the and actually within my garden, I have some that are more like 4x27 at the community garden. I can make longer than some 4x16s here at home. But all told, it's about having 47 4x8 raised beds. And that, I think I figured that out. That's about 1,300 square feet, a little bit more than 1,300 square feet of space that's actually under cultivation. That's not counting the walking rows between it. So that's what I do. And that's probably, unless something would dramatically change in my life and I wanted to spend all my waking hours gardening, that's probably close to as much as I can manage well and keep up with. So within that garden, my goals are to have fresh vegetables available for my family. I have three kids, each of whom has children. So that's like three families. There's 15 all of us when we sit down to the dinner table all at the same time. But I try to, we don't sit down at the dinner table all at the same time every day. We do that at holidays, although two of the families do come for Sunday dinner and on a regular basis. And it's a source of great enjoyment for me to be able to have vegetables from the garden available for each of those dinners. And I particularly enjoy when they ask me, is this from your garden? And I get to say yes.
Yes, that is rewarding, right?
It's very rewarding. It's, you know, as we get to, as you and I know, as we get to this age, we understand where the richness in life comes from. And that's one of the places for me.
Yes. Michelle, there are times, let's say pre-COVID, when during the summer, my wife might drive down to Allentown to visit Renee and his wife, Lynn, and the grandkids and our son and daughter-in-law. And during the August trips, on her drive home, I meet her at the driveway because there's usually a big basket of Renee vegetables fresh from the backyard and community gardens that are sent from Renee back to up here to Andover to me. So I've taken pictures of the colorful assortment of vegetables that he's sending. And Renee, I want to add one final point to the introductory comments you're making. My experience, I've seen lots of farms, lots of home gardens, and I call it the August doldrums, where whether it's a commercial farm or a home garden, oftentimes in the heat of August, we get a little tired of weeding and we can all close our eyes and envision gardens and fields that are overrun by weeds with the vegetable crops somewhere in between the weeds. Renee's garden is nothing like that. Anytime I'm visiting him and we're standing in his garden having wonderful conversations, there's hardly a weed that my eye can find. So Renee, a tip of the cap there. I just want our listeners to get a good feel for the level of detail that you're operating on under. And that is a perfect segue to start talking about how you think about scheduling your gardening activities and all of these individual plots that you described to us. And just to open the conversation, Michelle, a few months ago, Renee sent me a picture of his desk in his office, and spread out across the desk was either a large sheet, Renee, with all of your plots drawn out, or several smaller sheets that were in order so that you were essentially looking down at your desk and you could see your garden plots. And what struck me was a bunch of post-it notes spread all over these individual plots that I assume have the crop, the cultivar, the planting, whether it's the first, second, or third. And seeing that picture, Michelle, immediately took me to any of my teachings to fellow commercial growers about crop scheduling. And you and I have spent several episodes talking about the detail orientation of crop scheduling. So I emailed back to Renee after seeing that picture and said to him, that's exactly what I do. So I thought it'd be really interesting. Our listeners have heard me say time and again, a plant is a plant is a plant, whether it's a cannabis plant or a tomato or a poinsettia. And I'm going to say this morning, as I hand it back to Renee, that scheduling is scheduling is scheduling. And the only difference between Renee's schedules and mine are parallel, Michelle, to analogous to what I've said in the past about a big greenhouse operations budget and mine as a small grower. We have the same line items, just different numbers of zeros after the digits. And I think Renee's scheduling and mine are also identical. I might be growing 1,000 plants of something commercially. He might be growing 10. So Renee, go ahead and share some of your thoughts about scheduling your activity.
Well, thanks for that compliment on my garden. That's also a source of pride and reward for me, too, to be able to look after my garden to the extent that I do. And you're exactly right. Those were post-it notes I had. I have a schematic of each of my gardens. And that's so I have three different schematics that I use. And I use post-it notes because I quickly discovered that when I'm planning, my first thought isn't always the right thought. And I ended up, before I was using post-it notes, I ended up doing a lot of scribbling out and rewriting, scribbling out and rewriting, and then printing another schematic and trying a second draft or a third draft or a fourth draft. Post-it notes, I can put them in a place and see that's not going to work and move them to another place. So those post-it notes are with the names of each cultivar or each crop on it are very helpful.
What are some of the reasons why you might move one of those post-it notes around?
So I'm doing a couple things. I'm trying to see, even though I have a small operation, I do think about things like not planting the tomatoes in the same place every year. You know, so I practiced crop rotation. It's not like moving a 5-acre field of tomatoes from one place to another place on my property, but I think I have about a dozen tomatoes that I put in here at home. And now that I've done it a couple of years, I see that where I'm going to grow tomatoes each year. I have about a 3 or 4 year rotation on how I move the tomatoes around. So moving the crops around for crop rotation and understanding what crops will block sunlight from of other crops. If I put all the tomatoes in the south and western portion of my I'm going to change that to the south and eastern portion where they block the early morning light. And I can't put smaller crops behind the tomatoes. So I think about that. And I think about a bit about garden companions and garden enemies, what can be next to each other and what doesn't really work well next to each other. So those are the three factors that come to mind right away, so that I can optimize the growing for each of the crops.
Thank you.
Michelle, that's such an insightful question. And I think if we, for those home gardeners that might listen to this episode, it's such a confidence booster to hear me as a commercial grower, Michelle, you as an economist, to hear us acknowledge that what Renee's describing are the same practices, principles that a commercial farmer thinks about and adheres to, the crop rotation, the shading, the pest management. So it's, again, a nice opportunity for us to overlap home gardening with farming and commercial greenhouse production, again, to acknowledge that we're all doing the same things. We have the same challenges. It's just a different scale level that we operate at.
Well, if I can pick up on that a little bit and maybe get back to some of the specific planning that I try to do. And first of all, when I was on before, you guys talked about how I seem to be in some sort of partway between being a home garden hobbyist and what commercial growers are doing on a much bigger level, which was I was completely complimented by that. And hearing the things that you say, Peter, I understand how all those practices that you've been encouraging me with, where they fit in, obviously with commercial gardeners, but with home gardeners that are trying to fine tune their growing practices. So I appreciate that, and I appreciate more and more. The more I do, the more I appreciate what commercial growers do. The effort, the expertise, the skill, and the time they bring to their trade.
That's a nice way to put it, Renee. I think if Michelle and I could, if we could incorporate more of what you just said, you know, if we could encourage home gardening and help teach home gardeners so that they could appreciate the agricultural, the commercial side of agriculture, I think it would help everybody move the needle and make progress. So back to scheduling, Renee, one last question before we move on. So in your scheduling thoughts and your the targets that you set for yourself, talk a minute or two about how you schedule successive sowings or crops of a given species so that you have uninterrupted supply for your extended family and keeping in mind that you don't want a lot of waste. So how are you walking that tightrope?
I want to circle back one last time to a contextual comment about why all this planning and how all this planning became important to me. When I first began gardening, my first year or two, I had a 8x12 garden plot in my backyard, and I just sort of turned over all the dirt, threw some seeds in there, and hope for the best. I'd go out and spray water on my tomatoes every now and then because they like that, which we talked about the last time. So that's part of the learning process for me. Obviously, with what I described, I'm well beyond that 1 8x12 now. And in order to manage and get the most out of my garden, I have to think about it ahead of time. I have to plan. I have to have an idea of where I'm going and what I want to do. So the successive planting schedule became important and is very, very helpful to me. I was at invited to a friend's house who's also an avid gardener way back a few years ago. And we're walking around her garden. She's giving all of us a little tour and says to us, "I discovered succession planning." Then this was quite a few years ago for me. And I thought, well, yeah, what she means by that. You know, I thought you just plant stuff whenever it's done, then you plant something else. And actually planning on what crops come first, what crops come next, who can follow what, and about how long they last can really help you get the most out of your garden. So and now I'm going to circle back even further to do all of that. Having notes from the previous season is very, very helpful. And I know a few months ago that you had a program about the importance of note-taking and looking at your notes at the end of the season. And when I sit down to start planning my garden for next year, those notes are very helpful. Those notes are the cornerstone of what I'm going to be doing the following season. And I will also give Peter a kudos here. He's the one, when I started gardening, he encouraged me, said to take notes for myself. He said, he suggested keep a record book, keep notes, keep track of what you're doing. And I wasn't quite sure why I was doing that, but now I know why I was doing that, and it's very helpful. I have all those papers in front of me. I go back and look at last year, and I see, well, when did I start putting my lettuce in, and when did I last pick it? So the most important notes that I took, that I take, are what's my planting date, when's my first harvest, and when's my last harvest for that particular crop. And seeing that helps me start to put that jigsaw puzzle together of what I want where in my garden and when do I want it there. And one of the ways I plan for that is I have different colored post-it notes. I have post-it notes that I use for the planting that's going to be getting done early in the spring, and a different color for the planting that will get done after the first frost. Crops like tomatoes and my peppers and eggplant and the other frost-sensitive plants. And then a different color for plantings that will come in July, August, and September. So that helps me keep all that in line.
Is it ever hard to stick to those dates, especially on that last harvest? If it's an earlier crop in your season, do you ever say, oh, I wish I could keep this plant one more week? Or has it really lived its cycle by then and you're willing to move on?
It's not really that hard to stick to it. But also, I know that I'm not going to sit here, plant it out, and that's it. You know, on July 5th, I go out and pull all the onions. Doesn't matter what they look like. It says pull onions on July 5th. That's what I'm doing. No, it's you have to have that flexibility in your own mind of, oh, geez, they're ready to go before July 5th, or geez, they're not quite ready, so I need to leave them in another week. I've done it a couple of years now, so I have a pretty good feel for when my peas will be done, and leaving them in another week. If they're done, they're done. Leaving them in another week won't help. If I look at them and I know they need another week to get full production out of them, then I can do that. Does that address your question?
Absolutely.
I think the real answer is, even with all the planning, you still have to have some flexibility and look at your garden and read your garden and know what's ready to be done and what's not ready to be done.
Sounds like that's the art and not necessarily the science of it all.
Yeah, that's having a feel for what's actually going on out there.